To those folks joining this podcast, as you know, these are a series of conversations that Ken has with all sorts of folks in our organization. And today, I'm delighted to have Dr. Jake Eiler join me. And Jake's got a unique perspective. Jake's an anesthesiologist and one of our leaders. And I like to hear who Jake is, but I want to start somewhere else first. For those of you that know and understand how the COVID pandemic has hit us, as a organization, and most importantly, you as a caregiver, Jake and his teams have been right smack dab in the middle of it in two particular ways. Of course, one in the OR, and of course, the others, they were up folks up in the ICU doing the intubations and putting themselves on the line every single day. And so Jake, I'd start first by saying thank you, and thank you to your colleagues for all the great work. But what was it like? I want you to, what was it like, Jake, whether it was in the OR? Because aerosol generating procedures are what is everybody's worried about. So you guys were smack dab in the middle of it, in the ICU or in the OR. What's going through your head, Jake?
Yeah, it's been a interesting time that's changed a lot. You know, initially, I think, and I can't speak for everybody on my team, but I think that we all kind of went through a lot of the same emotions. We were scared of the unknown and not knowing exactly how this was going to impact, you know, the initial waves and initial information that we had. We were concerned about, you know, appropriate PPE and appropriate protection, concerned about the clinical aspects of what this means for our patients. You know, we shut down surgeries and, you know, did a lot of planning, and we had a huge team of our anesthesiologists and CRNAs along with kind of surgical support to kind of figure out, okay, how do we do the surgical cases, because people are still sick and people still need to have their surgeries. And so it was balancing a lot of that during that time. And then, you know, it's transitioned multiple times actually over the pandemic. We went from the initial shutdown and planning phases to now we start seeing some COVID to, you know, some of our major surges, at which point, like you mentioned, our team was fantastic and trying to just help where we can and do the best that we can with the staff that we have and the extremely expertise skills that we have for our anesthesiologists and CRNAs. So helping in the ICU with the intensivists and hospitalists and, you know, with procedures and with, you know, respiratory therapy and the nursing staff, just to try and be an extra set of hands. We're not always the team leader up there, but just sometimes being an extra set of hands, being part of the team and trying to say, well, what can I do today to try and make today a little better for everybody and in our goal of trying to take care of patients? And so we've been through that. And then you see the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, only to realize that, gosh, it's not done. So there's definitely been a lot of ups and downs with it. You know, on a personal level, I worry about my work family every single time that, you know, every day, because we have people who need to be intubated upstairs for COVID, and that puts us at risk. Every time that, you know, through all the pre-op testing and planning and things like that, my concern is always, well, how do we take care of our team? How do we take care of the people who are around us helping to take care of these patients, whether it be surgeons, you know, our circulating nurses, our techs, and just the people who help support us throughout the day in pre-op, post-op, and in the operating room. So it's been a challenging time. You know, I think, and we're not alone. You know, I talk with a lot of our anesthesiologist colleagues across the state and in different areas, and it's always interesting to see different people have different perspectives, have gone through different surges. But at the end of the day, what you find is that it's stressful, but it's also why we're here. We're here to take care of people. We're here to, you know, and in my job, you know, and career pathway, we're here to take care of the sick at the most stressful time in their life and do our best to get them better.
Yeah, Jake, I want to just, for those of you that listen to these podcasts, you know, many times they get pretty personal. So Jake, I'm going to go there for a minute. You talked about your purpose. In some respects, you hurl yourself into the way of danger, right? By not knowing much about COVID, intubating people and doing the best that you can. So what does Jake think about hurling yourself in front of danger, the sense of purpose, almost self-sacrifice in a way? You put your health at risk and your colleagues put their health at risk in order to do a higher calling. And what's that feel like, Jake?
I've never thought of it like that. Yeah, I think from my standpoint, I mean, it's not just part of the job, right? I mean, it is a small part of the job, but it's also kind of the mentality. You know, at the end of the day, when you think about your priorities in life and what drives you as a person, my family, my wife works at CenterCare also. I have three beautiful little girls. I mean, it's about family. And then, but really that's where I say like our work family is kind of an extension of that. You know, I'm a big believer in team and, you know, growing up playing sports and, you know, being from a small community, you know, especially in the Midwest and here in Minnesota, like your team is everybody around you, and you don't always get to pick your team, but you can always make the best of your team. And so it's kind of, well, I would never, a few principles I live by, like I would never expect somebody to do something if I'm not willing to do it myself, if I'm not willing to be there. And that being said, it's also about like, I want to take care of people how I want my family taken care of, because this is our community. I want to be there so that we can actually take care of, you know, the family member who's having a stroke, like my grandma did, or somebody who's having a heart attack, or somebody who, you know, fell down and, you know, broke a bone, or, you know, any of the unfortunate cancer, you know, folks that are out there. Because in our personal lives, we all deal with things like that outside of work. But then you realize, like, you come to work, and these are the people that you take care of every day. And so you want to give them the best opportunity. You want to do right by them. And so I just feel like it's, you know, I mean, I went into medicine not as a job to get a paycheck, but as a, you know, I found it as a way that I could have a positive influence, and I really enjoy it. Practicing medicine is a challenge because it's unpredictable. You use the experience and training that you have to try and make the best decisions in the moment that you have to try and, you know, lead to the best positive outcomes. Like, you use experience and education, but you can't predict the future. So you make the best decisions at the time. And in anesthesia, I mean, our decisions come seconds by seconds, minutes by minutes. And so you have to make the best decision with the information that you have in front of you, with the goal being a positive outcome, but knowing that not everything's predictable. And so, you know, yeah, we you know, our CRNAs are awesome. We work as a team, our anesthesiologist. I think the thing that's blown me away more than anything is that it's not an individual saying, hey, I'm going to fix this. It's really a lot of people saying, okay, well, how do we tackle this problem? How do we work together? How do we problem solve? How do we help support each other during this stressful time and with all these things going on? And I've been very impressed with our team. You know, we had CRNAs volunteering to go up to the ICU because they had a background in that and felt like that was the area of influence that they could help. We had anesthesiologists who, you know, helped to develop protocols and helped to kind of coordinate with the hospitalist group. And, you know, in some ways, if you have to turn a negative into a positive, you know, seeing that collaboration and that willingness to kind of step outside of your own area and find ways to, you know, positively impact the greater community, I think is a good thing. I feel like I'm just here to try and help guide our department and, you know, the perioperative area to try and balance the needs of the surgical patients with the needs of the hospital and the COVID patients. And we're on this roller coaster of what that exactly means on a day-to-day basis. But the team around me is what continues to motivate me and my family at home to say, like, what is the big purpose here?
I'm going to come back to that notion of team, but I want to next go to your last statement about your family. With your wife working here and you certainly being in a higher risk category simply because of the work that you do, what were your family conversations like in last March and April and May and June as you willingly came to work and helped lead the work and expose yourself? And you got to think about, so talk about what was going through Jake and your wife's head and your family's head during this.
Yeah, I mean, it's... we've had some interesting conversations, you know, and again, I'm sure for everybody, it's not just, you know, my wife, it's your family too. And, yeah, extended family and things like that, because we had conversations saying, okay, what's going to happen? It wasn't a, if I get exposed or if I get sick or, you know, if she gets sick or those type of things. It's, well, when this happens, because, you know, based on our professions, you know, our choices were either to not work, which didn't seem like a viable option just for, you know, you felt like you'd be, I couldn't do that to patients and that sort of thing. Or how do you have a plan? And so I remember sitting down with my wife early on in the process and saying, okay, this is going to get bad. Like, we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but I'm hearing from other areas that, like, when it gets bad, like, I'm just going to have to be at the hospital. Like, okay, we're going to have to figure out a way to separate. We're going to have a plan. We're going to have to rely on grandparents, and you don't want to put them at risk. But on the other hand, the risk of having them be exposed to our kids versus, you know, us versus not being able to go to work and help the team and help take care of patients. You know, we had those conversations and they weren't fun. You know, I mean, and my wife, luckily she fully supports almost everything that I do. let's be real. But she was very supportive and just realized like, this is kind of part of what my role is as a clinician, what my role as an anesthesiologist, but my role with, you know, being part of the team and being a leader of the team. And it comes with the price of you put yourself, you know, out there sometimes. Just like we had conversations, you know, with, okay, what are we going to do with the kids for school? What are we going to do with, you know, masking for the kids? What are we going to do? You know, I remember when the vaccine came out and, you know, it was again, okay, well, we need to talk about this. We need to try and figure out what are we going to do here? Just make sure we're on the same page, get as much information as possible, make sure that we're making the decision that's, you know, best for us and how we kind of, you know, and my mind always goes to kind of the risk benefits of every situation, because that's how I process things and think about things. And, you know, my job is to try and decrease that risk as much as possible for surgical patients to give them, you know, keep them safe and comfortable and things of that nature. So that's how I always kind of interpret things is, okay, well, what information do I have? What information do I need? How do I process that in a way so that I can understand what my risks are, both, you know, in a positive and negative way. And so, you know, my wife and I talked about it and chose to get vaccinated just because we knew that we were going to continue working and we knew that we wanted to, you know, try and protect ourselves as best as possible for, you know, not only us, but our family and, you know, our grandparents and things of that nature. So it makes for some interesting conversations, and they're not always easy conversations, but they're necessary conversations to try and, you know, have open lines and understand, I would argue, no different than a lot of other conversations, whether it be about, you know, healthcare, whether it be about finance, whether it be about raising kids, you know, all these types of things, as far as like, you need to, you know, communicate and understand as much as possible. And, but at the end of the day, you don't always have all of the information that you want to have. And sometimes you have to make a decision that's just the best decision you can make in the moment. And that's what we always try and do. And I always tell her if either one of us have concerns, like, we need to talk about it, because it's important.
Yeah, Jake, well stated. And so I want to go back to a comment you made about teamwork and your observation about how crucial this notion of team was last year. And we all kind of hoped that when that surge died down, that'd be it. Right, Jake? It ain't over. And so how do we continue to create that unified team, common purpose, as the Delta variant, and I'm sure there'll be something else coming, this we're in a kind of a long haul here. How do we maintain that sense of team spirit when as you know, over time, differences occur, opinions change, and we still need that same commitment to each other and that same sense of purpose that you have described so well? How do we keep that going, Jake? Because right now it seems fragile at times, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I mean, I think there's a lot of concern for what the future holds. And I think if there's one thing that we can all agree on is nobody can really predict what's going to happen in the either even the short term, you know, but especially the long term. I've been here 7 years. 7 years ago when I started, could have I anticipated having, you know, being part of a major pandemic during my lifetime? No. I mean, could you predict even at the start? I mean, even the predictions that we've had throughout COVID have waxed and waned. And, you know, I always make fun of the weather people because they obviously have a hard time sometimes getting it right, but you can do the best with the information that you have. I think the biggest thing is that we need to listen to our team and try and understand what concerns are and try and support the people who are on our team. You can't predict exactly how everything's going to play out, but I think that people need to know that we're going to have their back and we're going to support them. You know, I think back when this initially started, at the start of the COVID, and we had a lot of things shutting down, and you know, a lot of the work that our leaders did to help to provide a certain amount of security for people, saying, "Hey, we value our employees and we're going to keep you, and we're going to figure, you know, as we try and see how this unfolds, we have a lot of work to do, but we're going to start there as kind of a basic principle." And I think that was fantastic. And I think it was needed to provide a certain amount of stability for our staff. And I think we're in kind of the same situation. Like, we need to figure out, well, what are people's concerns? How can we address those? And how can we find a way to listen to our team and make sure that they're supported in kind of what the overall purpose and greater good is? So, but it's challenging because, you know, it's easy to get kind of into a microsphere of, well, this is how it affects me, or this is what maybe I'm not seeing the big picture of things, or maybe I have different information. And so I think we need to hear that information and try and, you know, understand that and work through that. And as leaders, I think that's our responsibility to everybody that we work with, is to try and understand, because oftentimes some of the best ideas come from people who aren't, you know, the top dog in a situation. They're the people who see it from their perspective and say, gosh, I think we could do this. And so I think it's really kind of listening, trying to be supportive, trying to understand, trying to provide the information that we have, use the resources we have. We have really smart people. We have really great teams of people, both, you know, in St. Cloud, who are experts in their field, you know, in our rural sites, and really kind of using those resources that we have to make the best decisions possible. It's really the only way that I see that we continue to move forward.
As you know, one of the challenges as the Delta variant has swept primarily through the unvaccinated is that more and more health systems and businesses, the armed forces, are requiring vaccination. You and your wife have been vaccinated, and still we have some of our folks that for many number of reasons might not be vaccinated. So how do we get back to that common sense of unity to take on COVID when we're fractionated over this? And what does Jake Eilers as a leader say about that? Because this is the conundrum we're all in right now. We want people to stay, and we want them fully engaged in this common thing that we're trying to get through, but yet we're divided. So what does Jake say to Ken?
I think we have to be a little realistic with the situation that we're in. I think there's a lot of information out there that has been taken out of context, or that people are concerned about. You know, social media is a benefit and a detriment, in that things get posted all the time without scientific background or with different interpretations of it. And, you know, you come to realize that if you ever want to find something to support your argument, even if it's, you know, not even related for COVID, you know, if you want to find an argument for what the best recipe is for something, you're going to find somebody who out there who's going to support you. And something that you can say, see, I found this on the internet, and this is what it said. And it's hard. It's hard for people to sift through the large volume and the various sites and information sources and try and figure out, okay, what's real and what's not. And I think that's just, it's a reality of a challenge that we have. I think the other part of it is that I don't think we've done a service with sometimes what our expectation is. I think that there was some false sense of security with even the vaccine, and with early on saying, well, if we do this, then we'll all be back to normal. And if we do this, it's like, this will totally eradicate COVID. And in my view, it's more about managing a situation than it is about totally eradicating something. And it may not be the popular opinion, but I think sometimes the same thing about, you know, some of our fundraisers that we have for cancer, as an example. I mean, they're fantastic and they do a lot of great work, but this notion that, well, eventually we're going to totally eradicate something that by definition is more of a long-term problem. We come up with fantastic treatments. Sometimes the treatments can provide cures, but the idea that, well, at some point we'll never have COVID, or we'll never have a pandemic, or we'll never have a viral illness, or we'll never have another cancer if we can just get to that point, I think is falsely providing hope. But I look at it and say, well, our goal needs to be, how do we try and manage the situation that we have? How do we, and that's what I see the benefit from the vaccine. And when I personally look at the data and try and review it and, you know, talk to colleagues, is that, well, it's not going to totally fix the problem of people getting COVID, but it's going to reduce your risk of the negative complications that happen from COVID. So it's managing that disease. And we do that all the time. You know, we have other, you know, things that we do all the time. You think of high blood pressure. You know, you never really treat high blood pressure or cure it, so you're never going to have it. You manage it so you don't have the negative outcomes of it. You think of diabetes. Well, a lot of times some people can be cured and not have diabetes, but a lot of times it's managing the chronic medical issue so that you can try and reduce the risk of having negative outcomes from it. And for me, that's where the COVID vaccine, I think we need to be honest with it. It's not going to be 100% success rate if you get vaccinated. We know that. It's not going to provide 100% immunity to getting sick, but it is, and I think it has been proven, that it is going to significantly decrease your risk of having significant illness, meaning hospitalizations, ICU stays, death, It's going to significantly decrease the chance of having long-term side effects from, you know, COVID, the long haulers that we see, which is, I think when this started, nobody really anticipated, everybody looked at the acute phase of it, and I don't think anybody anticipated the long-term negative effects of it. But I think it's trying to look at it and say, how do we manage and try and decrease that for the population as best as possible? And I think that's where, you know, trying to provide that information and try and set realistic expectations for what we're actually trying to do. You know, I think people understood a little bit better when it first started as, okay, well, we want to flatten the curve, you know, the popular thing. But realistically, we're still kind of in that rather than it being a 2-week mentality, I think that needs to be kind of our long-term mentality. Like, we need to continue to try and manage this as best as possible, because with these surges, the more that we can level that out to be able to provide the care, the easier it is for our staff and the better care we're able to provide, because it puts such a strain on our staff and our team and our caregivers and our, you know, physicians and nurses and techs and support staff and on the community. And so I think, at least from my standpoint, I look at it as, how do we try and manage this current pandemic to try and, you know, keep as many people safe as possible, try and decrease as many hospitalizations as possible. And, you know, it's doing as much as you can with the information you have. And, you know, I have three little girls, and so I can quote Frozen and sing songs from it. But one of the statements in there is actually quite accurate, where they talk about, you know, when you can't predict the future, all that you can do is the next best thing that's right in front of you. And I think that's where we're at. And I hear from my staff, I hear from, you know, nurses I work with in the operating room and who have concerns about long-term outcomes from, you know, the vaccine. And I can understand where that comes from. You know, I mean, we all wish that we had 30 years of data to be able to say, okay, we know this is what we know. But I think we also have to look at the flip side of it and say, this is what we know. We know the information for decreased hospitalizations, decreased risk. And so we're making the best decision with the information we have now. And nobody has a crystal ball that can accurately predict what this is all going to mean. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't act on the best information we have.
Boy, Jake, just a lot of great points. And as we wrap up our conversation today, I'd finish with, again, I'm going to kind of go with the personal side. You mentioned the kids, school year starting. We've been at this now for a year and 3 months, Jake. How are you doing? How are your troops doing? It's a gift that never keeps on giving, you know, that old joke. And this is not a joke. How are your folks doing? How's Jake doing? How's your family doing?
You know, luckily, I think we're doing well. My kids are small enough to be starting school, and they don't know a lot of differences. But I think the thing that always is impressive to me is kids have the ability of just looking what's in front of them and saying, okay, what are we going to do today? You know, they're not going to worry about, well, am I wearing masks in school, or am I going to have to distance learn, or am I going to, you tell them, hey, we're starting school next week, and they're excited about it. They're like, oh, that'd be great. Well, what are we going to do? And I think that's always been a grounding factor for me, is to see kind of the motivation for why we all do what we do is to have our, you know, family and to take care of them. You know, my parents, my in-laws, everybody's been really supportive. It puts a lot of burden on, you know, all of us in healthcare, because, you know, most of the time it's, hey, what do you think about this? But it's also an opportunity to kind of educate and to be able to talk through things and have some of those difficult conversations and realize that, yeah, there are different perspectives. People have questions. I see the world much differently from my medical background than, you know, some of my family members who weren't, you know, none of them went into medicine or were physicians or nurses or things of that nature. So I have a different perspective on things, and no different than if it comes to farming. I mean, I wouldn't be the best to take care of crops, but, you know, I'm going to rely on the people who do that every day and have that expertise and situations. And, you know, and moving forward, it's just, it kind of changes how you think about things. You have to really think about, well, what's the risk in this situation? What's the benefits of, you know, social gatherings and things of that nature? Do I look forward to times when we can travel or, you know, go to a conference or, you know, go to a reunion and not worry about it? Absolutely. I think we all look forward to that. And that's where, you know, we're not there yet. And at some point, you know, we hope to get back there. And it may be a different, it might be our new normal to some degree, that you always have to consider, you know, some factors of that. But I think that, you know, the more that we can do to try and get back to a new normal or a more baseline state, I think we'll all feel comfortable with that. So we're just, you know, taking it a day at a time and looking forward to school starting and trying to figure out how to keep the kids in school and, you know, let us keep working and stay healthy.
Well, Jake, your last comment about getting back to normal or whatever new normal is, I think everybody that listens to this will really resonate with. Joining me for this conversation has been Dr. Jake Eiler, dad of three girls, spouse, anesthesiologist, physician leader, and part of a team of folks that truly have been heroic, both in the OR and the ICU, as we have helped manage this pandemic over the last 14 months. So thank you, Jake. Continued best health for you and your folks, and continued progress with your team as we manage this surge of COVID, and as you well stated, the unknownness of what tomorrow looks like. Thank you very much, Jake.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.